Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas on Saturday, February the 10th. A little chilly, a little rainy here in North Texas. A good evening to do a podcast. I hope everybody's doing well. I see on the map that there's lots of other places in the country that are cold and freezing today. So thank you for joining us. Let's kind of warm up together here in this amazing world of the podcast. Today we're going to talk about a memo. The memo wars continue. We're going to talk about San Francisco, the resistance, dreamers and Democrats, some interesting thoughts about that. So let's begin. Let's begin by talking about the memo. Apparently, this memo thing is still going. I couldn't believe 2 weeks later, they're still talking about a memo. But the latest, of course, is that the Democrats wanted to release their memo. They sent it to President Trump. Obviously, he's having it checked over by the FBI. I knew that this was going to happen. This is not a major surprise to me at all. The Republicans released their memo, and then the Democrats want to release theirs. And of course, they load it up with all kinds of controversial things that have to be checked. And the whole objective here is simply say, well, President Trump did not release the memo that we had originally sent to him. Therefore. It's just utter nonsense. And that's why the more that I see all of this, and then you hear the stories about the warrant, and you hear the story about FISA, and you hear the stories about whatever else was going on, this is all headed to an independent counsel, in my opinion, because I just think the partisanship is at such a level that I don't think it can be fixed, at least to anyone's satisfaction. So I think this is headed to an independent counsel, and that's the last thing the Democrats want. That's why I cannot believe the Democrats are so stupid that they're fighting all of this, because they're simply driving it to an independent counsel, and that's not where they want to be. Because if there is as much dirt in the closet as I think there is in the Obama administration, and definitely in the Clinton Foundation and so on, if there is as much dirt as I think there is, this is not going to be pretty for President Obama, for the Clintons, for the Democrats. So all I can say is bring on the independent counsel and just let it go. Let it go and see where it takes us. But this memo, my memo versus your memo nonsense, it's all that it is, just a lot of nonsense. I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning talking about the city of San Francisco, one of the great cities in the United States, or at least it used to be. Now it's under a lot of different pressures. And there's now a very interesting phenomenon in San Francisco. People are actually packing up and leaving. And they're citing some reasons. They're talking about the crime. They're talking about the chaos in the city. The cost of living is just ridiculous, the taxes. And they're picking up. And some are moving somewhere else in California. But most of them are actually leaving the city of San Francisco and moving somewhere else. In fact, in the article that I wrote, I cite an example of a friend of mine who has actually gone through that here recently. And they're moving out. They're moving out because the city of San Francisco is becoming an unmanageable city. It's becoming, as I say, a city that is just a ghost of what it used to be. So what a shame. What a shame. Democrats just destroy all these great cities, whether it's San Francisco, whether it's L.A., Detroit, Chicago. I mean, they've destroyed all these great cities, and people are moving out. And you cannot blame them. It's totally rational for these people to move out. So check out my post at the American Thinker. It's gotten a lot of comments, a lot of clicks, as they say. I also put it on Twitter, and many people have retweeted my my post, which is always Always very interesting. I have a post coming out Sunday morning about the resistance. You know, there's you've been hearing for quite some time about the resistance and all this intensity in the Democrat Party. And there's a wonderful article in The Atlantic, not exactly a right-wing magazine, saying that the resistance is running into a little reality. A couple of things are going on. Number one, you cannot have a movement whose only objective is to destroy Trump. I mean, there has to be more to the Democrats or to their campaign of 2018 than we hate Trump. We hate Trump. There's a limit to that. There's a limit to how much people are going to turn out for that kind of message. And it's interesting because the former governor of Massachusetts, I can't think of his name right now, but the gentleman who was the governor before the current governor, some people have thought of him. He used to be, I think they used to refer to him as like Obama in the sense that they were both very similar, the first black governor of Massachusetts and so on. And he has a very interesting comment or a very interesting quote in this article in The Atlantic. And he's basically saying, hey, we got to be more than just we hate Trump. We got to tell people why vote for us. Why, you know, what's right about us? Not everything that's wrong about Trump, but what's right about us. And I think he's exactly right. I mean, he's exactly right. So I think it's interesting because you now have Democrats who are beginning to realize that they have a great opportunity in November, the opportunity of being the opposition party. As you know, in American history, the opposition party always does well in the first election of a new president, but they don't seem to be capitalizing on it to the degree I think that many people think they should. And now you have a situation where the polling data is starting to shrink. You know, what used to be a 14 or 15 point lead, now it's down anywhere from 2 to 5. I mean, pick your poll. At the same time, President Trump's approvals are going up. At least they're in the high 40s at Rasmussen. They have it at 50%. Now, a lot of people always like to say, well, Rasmussen is a Republican pollster. Well, I don't care who runs Rasmussen. Rasmussen may be a Republican pollster. I really don't know. But they're also a reliable pollster, which is all that matters to me. I mean, if a pollster has the ability to tell us what's going on in the country, I don't care if it's a left-wing or right-wing owner. The fact is that it's the information that is reliable. And Rasmussen is very reliable, and they've got President Trump at 50%. The American economy is doing better, of course. Now, this week, the stock market, I still think this was a correction. I don't think there's anything major here. But the stock market does make a lot of noise when it goes down. But I think overall, the Democrats are beginning to realize that they're going to need more than simply say, we hate Trump, that they're going to have to come up with a message, something that tells people, hey, vote for us because we represent this. Vote for us because we stand for this. And what I see inside the Democrat Party is some divisions. Divisions that are regional. The coastal Democrats are clearly different than the central, the centrist Democrats in the middle of the country. I think we saw that with DACA when they put it up, when they wanted to shut down the government over DACA. I mean, who stood against it? I mean, who voted against shutting down the government over DACA? The senator from Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia, Alabama. What do they have in common? Those are states where Donald Trump did very well. So the Democrats are not exactly united either. And I think that this also may be affecting the resistance. And I'll just say one more thing about this so-called resistance. We had a couple of marches here a couple of weeks ago. We had the Women's March, and the very same day, by coincidence, they had the Pro-Life March. And they were literally next to each other, one going down the street here, the other one going down the street here. There were about 5,000 to 7,000 people, according to the Dallas Morning News, for the Women's March. There were between 6,000 and 10,000 people for the Pro-Life March. So, you know, if you want to talk about intensity, well, there's your intensity. I mean, you had people coming out for entirely different causes. And probably those people are going to vote entirely different. I would think the pro-life movement is pretty happy with President Trump and more than likely will vote Republican. So intensity, I guess it depends what march you're covering. Let me tell you about my good friend Carlos Geddes. You know, he's been playing around town and that we get a chance to play his music here in our podcast. And he's just a fantastic musician. He's from Venezuela. And I'm going to recommend that you go to his Facebook page. It's a free page. It's a public page. Check out his page, and you'll have a chance to see where he's playing. For example, tonight, Saturday night, he's playing at Cafe Madrid, which is a wonderful restaurant in downtown Dallas. So check him out. You go to his Facebook page, you check him out, and it'll tell you there where he's playing. But you definitely have to go. You got to go see my friend Carlos, because wherever he goes, the food is great, as it is tonight. And the music that he provides you with, the background music that he provides for you, is just absolutely amazing. Well, the dreamers. You know, I was thinking about this. I was watching this young dreamer, this young man who was being interviewed by Fox News today. And he's a dreamer, and he's beginning to complain that the Democrats are using the dreamers. I keep asking a very basic question of the dreamers. And that question is, how, if you were to sign, let's say you signed the offer that President Trump is making, that is, he's going to legalize you and give you a chance to apply for citizenship in 10 to 12 years. Obviously, you've got to meet some criteria, but assuming you meet that criteria, you're going to be on a path to citizenship in 10 to 12 years. What does it matter to you that they build a wall, or that they do e-verify, or that they stop chain migration, or that we go into a merit system? What is any of that? Or that we stop the lottery? How does any of that affect you? The answer is it doesn't. I mean, the fact is you're already in. You've been legalized. And this is where I think you're going to start seeing a lot of dreamers figure out that they're being used politically by the Democrats, that they're being used politically because the Democrats want to keep these dreamers angry, and they want to turn this into an opportunity against Trump. But I think eventually you'll start seeing the cracks. And I think you'll start seeing a lot of dreamers who say, hey, guys, let's sign this thing. We're going to be legalized, and we're going to be on a path to citizenship. But what's the big deal? So I really believe that that's what's going to turn the dreamers around. I think President Trump is going to hold his feet to the ground. I think he should. I think the Republicans are going to do the same thing. And I think it'll be the Democrats who will fold and eventually have to accept what I think is a pretty practical offer from President Trump. And I say practical because that's the only offer that will pass. I mean, the only way DACA is going to pass is if you have all these other things. Otherwise, it won't get any support from most of the Republicans, and it'll just collapse in the House as well as in the Senate. So my sense is that I think a lot of dreamers are starting to figure this out. And I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing cracks in the dreamer community, where many people are saying, hey, where do we sign? Let's go ahead and sign, and the heck with these Democrats who keep using us. I think you're going to start seeing a lot of that very soon. On this day in history, 1957, Laura Ingalls Wilder, the lady who wrote those wonderful books, The Little House on the Prairie, she passed away on this day in 1957. Of course, for many of us, we became acquainted with her in that wonderful television series, The Little House on the Prairie. Big news this weekend, John Gavin, who was a movie star as well as the U.S. ambassador to Mexico. I remember him. I was living in Mexico when President Reagan selected him as U.S. ambassador to Mexico. He passed away. He was 79, I think, or 89 years old. He was actually a very talented and knowledgeable man who was sent to Mexico as ambassador, one of the better ones that we've had here recently. Also on this day, 1950, Luis Donaldo Colosio, who was once a president or candidate for president in Mexico, who was assassinated in 1994. He was born. He would have been 68 years old today. That's pretty remarkable how young he was when he was assassinated. And we just got word, we believe, that Yu Darvish will be signing with the Cubs. So we wish you a lot of success. I think it's a pretty incredible contract for a 32-year-old pitcher. He's going to be getting, I guess, $126 million over 6 years. So, hey, congratulations to you. I think that's a pretty good contract, you, and we wish you the very best. And thanks for all those wonderful years with the Rangers. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you later, and stay away from that freezing rain here in North Texas. Bye-bye, everybody.